Is the windshield wiper noise going to make this unlistenable?
It depends. Sometimes the muse of the windshield wiper... It depends how steadily it's raining. Like, if it rains steadily and I keep this on fairly steadily, it starts to calm down. Maybe. It's not coming down.
I fear this is bad.
All right, so this could be bad.
Episode 11, Fight, Flight, Freeze, or Fawn. In this episode, your hosts Steve and Mal ruminate on threats and the panoply of possible human responses. Whether it's a bear or too many emails, isn't it nice to know you have options? Strap in for the ride to Redacted. Please be advised there are occasional cuss words in these episodes, so now you know.
All right, this could be a problem, friends.
Well, why don't you make it less fast? Yeah.
Maybe what I'll do is I'll only sporadically... We'll drive blind so
like,
that we can...
Do you need to tell the story of Mom on the motorcycle?
No.
Why not?
Was that a disappointing answer?
Yes.
We'll just leave it there. All right, okay. Would you like to tell the story?
I wasn't there.
Okay, all right.
It was not yet in evidence.
Right, so the thing is that Nikki and I, your mom and myself, were in Bermuda, and we rented a motor scooter, which, you know, to us was like easy rider, like a chopper, but it was a scooter. All right, fine. We hadn't done much scooting, if any, before. I think I got there a day or two later than Mom. Mom had gotten there before. This is before we were married. We met up in Bermuda. Still in the dating phase of our relationship.
Seems like a pretty extreme date.
Yeah.
Like, to go to Bermuda.
Bermuda. For jet setters like ourselves. Back in the day, we weren't the stodgy people you know us as now. We would think nothing of biffing off to Bermuda just to hang out. Apparently. I think it was all her idea, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But then, so there came a moment where I was like on the back of the scooter. Your mom was like in the driver's seat, whatever. And we're tooling along the roads of Bermuda. And at a certain point, I mean, we've been going maybe 15, 20 minutes. You know, some traffic, not a huge amount. But, you know, for the scooter, we're going at a decent clip and everything. And we stop. Maybe she stopped to take care of something. And it was only then that I learned that her contact lenses, under the influence of the salt air in Bermuda, were like... Milky is an understatement. They were basically opaque. And I was like, how long have you been, like, driving like this with me on the back? And she said, the whole time. And I was impressed by that, one way or the other.
Yeah. I think... Yeah.
What else do you remember about this story?
Well, I think that perfectly illustrates a specific dichotomy between you and Mom that people who I introduce to you to tend to misconstrue. They tend to think of you as the more laid back one because you talk more and you have smoked pot in your life and like give those vibes. And
a little bit of a surfer vibe.
Yeah, you do improv.
I won't cop to that. Yeah.
Your D&D character's name is Uber.
Alter ego. Frankly.
Alter ego.
Yeah.
And Mom is a little bit quieter when getting to know her.
Right. We don't want to use the word uptight.
Slightly
or
drier.
We?
No, I don't think she's uptight at all. And, all right, but, and I know. Think this story perfectly illustrates that because she's way more casual about certain things than you. She like set something on fire in the oven and then closed the door and was like, it'll burn itself out. And you're like, it'll take the house with it. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I think I might need to like judge that little anecdote up. Yeah. But yeah, right, exactly. There are areas where I'm chill and they're not, you know.
I think that Grandma is really like that too, because she's like very high strung about certain things, and other things she like, she's like total badass, couldn't give a fuck about. She's
right.
like, yeah, I'll write a novel about how cults are in America are to like the end of Nazism. They're like a continuation of that. And get death threats, you know, at my home where my children live, whatever.
No, actually,
she won't own a microwave.
All right, fair enough. Just to correct the record slightly, there were no death threats. Incredibly, it was a quaint earlier era.
Well, didn't she have a huge lawsuit?
Yeah, it was like $2 million worth of lawsuit.
Yeah.
Right. In lieu of death threat.
And she was like, no sweat.
Well, that's not exactly true. She was
minorly sweating.
I think there was a certain amount of involuntary swallowing that went on.
Uh-huh.
Right. So how did we get on to that? What does that have to do with anything that might come next?
That your mom can also be both high strung and chill.
Right. But I mean, I think it's may not apply to this particular moment in her life, but I think you're right in general. She can be chill about some things, and I mean, she would tell you that when she was a younger person, younger than the current 97, she was more highly strung.
Yeah.
And a more anxious person. And she credits her contact with the somewhat accidental guru, Jiddu Krishnamurti, sort of anointed at a very young age as like the next big thing in your guru department. She feels like once she had contact with him, he calmed her way down. You know, his things were, you know, don't struggle with yourself to like completely try to like strangle your anxiety. Just listen to it.
Yeah.
Pay attention.
Don't you usually go that way?
I do. I went the wrong way.
Oh.
Fuck. Okay, well, so what would Krishnamurti do in this situation?
So who in the car knows the route, huh?
Not I. So.
What if we want to get really Buddhist?
If we want to get really Buddhist, what?
Then the right road is the one that you're currently on.
Yeah. There's a lesson here somewhere. I'm not sure what it is, though. I've forgotten what it is.
But this guru is talking to Grandma.
The guru's talking to Grandma, Krishnamurti.
And he said to listen to your anxiety?
Yeah, listen. Just listen to what's going on. Pay attention and don't judge it.
Yeah.
Don't, like, seize up and judge yourself and all that. Just listen.
Yeah.
And that was, like, a big... And she, it's like she credits him for calming her down as a human being.
Well, I think that is something that, you know, mental health professionals say about anxiety is that... The anxiety is—it's like a seatbelt locking up when you like, you know, hit it hard. Like when your body like moves forward really hard and it like locks up. It's like in order to calm it down, it's like you have to realize that the anxiety is reacting to something because it thinks that it's a threat to you and it's trying to like protect you by making you hyper aware of your surroundings. It's like an evolutionary feature.
The fight or flight response.
And even if it's just reacting to you needing to send some emails, you're like, I need to pay attention to the fact that this is making me really anxious, I still have to do the thing, but there's a way to approach it like a wary horse, you know, and not let it kick me and win its trust.
I feel like that we are adventuring into the land of mixed metaphor.
Yes. I thought we were adventuring into the land of redacted.
Well, we're doing them both at the same time. Okay, can we all agree? I always love to channel my inner Owen Wilson in the Darjeeling Limited. Check it out. Can we all just agree that it's kind of a weird thing that, like, so in caveperson days, right?
Yes.
So there'd be, like, a bear or something, whatever they had. I don't know if they had bears.
They had something.
Do we have bears?
Fulfilling the niche within the ecosystem of a bear.
Some bear-like, for the purpose of this discussion, creature. And you're like, you've just, like, finished taking a shit or something. You're just coming out of the cave in the morning, you know, trying to get rid of the sleep mouth, however you did it before the invention of the toothbrush, and you're coming out. This is like your typical caveman day I'm describing here.
Yeah, Tuesday.
And then just on a Tuesday, coming out, you know, you're thinking about you're going to have some leftover something for breakfast. And there's a bear, or something like the bear. It's like right there, a mountain lion, a bear. And, you know, you immediately go into fight or flight response. And can we all disagree that it's a little weird that fast forward to, like, today, and now you get the same feeling from too many emails?
Yes.
That's all I'm saying.
But also, I think they've updated fight or flight to include two other common responses to stressors and danger like that.
Yeah.
Fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. So, freeze is freeze. You freeze up.
It's got to start with an F sound, though. Yes. That's the important thing.
And fawn is, a response you typically see with abuse victims, abuse survivors, where they, like, try and ingratiate themselves with the other person specifically as a trauma response, specifically as a stressor response. They, like, try and ameliorate whatever is making them really anxious.
By fawning on the abuser.
Like, yeah.
that's a wonderful knife you've got there, sir.
I mean, in like, domestic abuse situations.
Well, actually...
kind of.
All right, so recent things. Things on your mind recently.
Yeah.
I had a thing that I'm happy to bring up.
Yes,
but please. Because I already have it, I opened the floor, the car floor, but not the car door, to you. Anything else before I go into my thing that was on my...
No, do it. Whatever.
All right, okay. So, this past Friday, today being Sunday... At the office, as you may know, I'm visited by these guys that I call the Lubavitchers, the
yes.
Orthodox Jews. So late on a Friday afternoon, they come in, as they are wont to do, and, you know, trying to convert me. Your mom has educated me that, you know, the main thing, they have a little bag, the tefillin that you put on.
Yes, yeah. The phylacteries.
Prayer, phylacteries.
Yeah.
To use a... much better known word.
Yes, the tefillin.
You know, phylacteries. You get it. So they come in, you know, to ask me to put it on.
I had my phylacteries removed.
Yeah, I just have one phylactery. Just my left phylactery. I still got it. But seriously, let's take this. Come on, this is serious. Let's not joke around. And so I actually, after these many years of being, you know, proselytized to put on the tefillin, I asked your mom, who knows about this stuff, you may know this, I did not know this, like, why is that? Obviously, it's important to them, and it's like a mitzvah,
yeah.
They get credit with God, and blah, 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 and it's good, and it's part of their mission. And they probably will never succeed with me, because I'm just not... I don't really proselytize that well normally, is what I'm saying. Anyway, they come in. I asked your mom, why, you know, what's the deal? What is it? What do they get? What, you know? And she said, totally, she knew. And it's about, like, the more people, every time somebody puts on tefillin, that hastens the moment when the Messiah will come. Mm. Did you know this?
No.
Yeah, so that's what it's about. So,
well,
all right.
The number of people they've gotten to do it, surely the Messiah has been and gone by now.
Yeah, well, apparently you got to keep doing it because Messiah ain't here yet, dude. So, fine. So these are young, somewhat youngish yeshiva buchers, you know, you're basic Lubavitchers, whatever. I think they study in a nearby town. There's a place. And the three of them are there, and they have the bag for the tefillin. But they you know, they don't even ask me anymore. It's just like, okay. But, you know, they do, like, next best things with me. So this time around, Elad says, do you want to... Would you like us to, you know, tell you, you know, a little story out of the Torah? And I said, no. But I said to him, let's do a compromise, all right? Why don't you tell me what the story's about? And then I will tell my wife, who they now know is, you know, like very learned in matters Talmudic, etc. I will then, when I go home, I'll tell her and I'll ask her to tell me about it. And that way she'll be happy and you'll be happy. And they were like, fine. So the guy says, it's about joy. And he goes on to explain a little more that he says, if you're working, you know, he sees me in my office. Let's say you're working and you've done something wrong. You've made a mistake. Don't feel, you know, and there's negativity in your thoughts. Let it go. And I thought, that's not, you know, and so they said they wished me joy. And I said, back at you, you know, on the Friday. And have a joyous week and weekend and everything. And great. And so there's that. And that's part one. I realized late in the day, I had been for a moment in this, you know, joy mode because of the benevolent visit from the Lubavitchers, who are simply trying to bring about the Messiah. And at the same time, I was like, when I thought about it just a little after they left, it was like, then, but there's the real ID act, and I hate that. And I was like furious. So I just, this is all my way of bringing up what's on my mind lately is like, how do you reconcile the absolute fervent commitment to live with joy and to have the joy that, after all, not one but three Lubavitchers have wished upon you, and then deal with the Gestapo Real ID Act anger. But the other thing is, like, the deeper message is, as Elad was saying, it's like, if you have negative thoughts, get rid of them. You know, it's like they do you no good. You got to mellow. And this gets back to what you were saying about mom and me having our different anxieties and the things that stress us out. It's like, all right, you're going to have stressors, and it's like incumbent on us to like deal with them, especially lately. Mm-hmm. And so we got to find a way of coping that we don't just like blow a gasket about stuff. So, I don't expect you to solve all this, but observations, your thoughts?
I have some advice, which is seek joy. Like Dan Savage wrote on this when he wrote about the AIDS crisis. He said, you know, we would get up in the morning, we would protest and riot all day, and then we would go home and change and go out dancing, and then, you know, the next day we would have a funeral, and then we would have protests, and then we would go out dancing. And he's like, the dancing kept us able to fight. And if you're burning yourself out by being like, I'm not allowed to be happy because everything is terrible, or my focus has to entirely be that, you're going to completely burn yourself out. You're not going to be able to continue. You have to seek joy. You have to find your community. Go outside and find your community, or find them wherever they may be. If you're in sort of an isolated area, that might be online. Or your community may not be other queer people where you live. But find one person, or find, you know, whatever.
An ally.
Yeah, that allows you to be joyful and to share joy with somebody else, and to also confide your sorrows, and you know, you can continue to fight the good fight. I mean, if you, yeah, I think that's it.
I love that you're saying it, and the way you're saying it. It does remind me inevitably, thematically, of those Lubavitchers that came to visit me.
Yeah.
But you're not asking me to put on tefillin, at least not yet.
Actually. Oh. Well, there's something that I've said to you before. I don't know if it's been on any of the recordings, but that specifically about my students, but also, like, you know, non-second graders also, which is that people need to expand their discomfort tolerance. Hmm. Because my students, at the slightest discomfort, they flinch away from it, they hate it. It's like, you know, it annoys me, even though I want to be sympathetic to them. Because
they flinch away from what now?
Discomfort, any kind of discomfort. So I'm like, you know, if they're bored, they'll start acting out. And if you have a little practice with it, not that you should, you know, be like pushing your kid over to skin their knees or anything, but like, if they're going to be a lot more independent, they're going to be a lot more like able to handle things that life throws at them without melting down. And that's not, you know, me saying parents are coddling their kids these days. Just like, that is an important life skill to teach. And also, mm-hmm. as an adult, if you feel that you don't have a lot of that, you should challenge yourself to take more of that on board.
I am loving all of this severely.
One practical way that I can suggest to do that is to talk to somebody, like, as long as you feel safe in the moment and environment that you're in and with the person in front of you, talk to somebody who you wouldn't normally talk to, because I've had some conversations recently with that specific
goal,
you know, yeah, with that specific goal in mind, that have been like nice conversations. There was this older woman on the train platform the other day. This was probably a few weeks ago, because I was wearing my winter coat, which is very bright and colorful, who approached me, and she was complimenting me on my coat, and I took my headphones off so that I could hear her. Normally, I wouldn't even do that. And she, like, asked if she could touch my coat. I said, sure. And then we ended up sitting next to each other on the train for a couple of stops. And we just talked, and she was this older woman from Italy, and we were talking about like fashion, and about her brother and how his personality kind of changed once he got married, and like and we talked about lots of different things. She asked me if I was married, and I said no, not yet. And she said, are you living with your partner? She used the word partner, and I said yes. And she's like, so you're basically married. She was like, if you can live with a person, that's like the whole thing. What the fuck are you talking about before?
I wanted to say about talking to strangers, I need to bring up, at least briefly, that lately I noticed that I've taken to really leaning into having fun, personal as possible, conversations on the phone with technical support, customer service type people. Specifically at Verizon.
Yeah.
I had this...
You think they have the most thankless and menial job?
I don't
in the
know.
World.
Whatever it is, like, and also they've been helping me lately. Like, yeah. I had modem and router problems. Mm-hmm.
Well, that tends to happen to someone your age.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, your router's going.
You need to get that checked.
Yeah, well.
Every 6 months. Yeah.
But anyway, I discovered, I said, you're from the East Coast, aren't you? Because you had this, like, definite... New York? He said, guess where? New York? No.
Boston.
New Jersey? No. Boston? No. Rhode Island. So I discovered by the end of it, I don't know his name, but I, you know, the conversation progressed to the point where we were just like, we were so close to ending, like, I love you, man.
Hey, stay golden, pony boy.
Just about. I mean, by the end of it, I'll just give you an excerpt that will tell you everything. I said, your daughter is lucky to have you because
oh my God.
You are so supportive of her soccer.
Wow.
This is where we went.
And do you want to be my best man at wedding? Look at the cherry blossoms on this car.
Sorry.
Look at the pink cherry blossoms on that car. Or don't. You're driving, it's fine.
Yeah, I'm driving.
Whatever, it's fine, you didn't even look.
All right, so we're now near the end.
We are at the end, in
the
fact.
End of this particular journey.
Yeah.
Where we have, I think we've got something.
I think we did. Too. We got there. First of all, we had an extra 20 minutes, but
yeah, well,
we got there.
I think that hurt more than it helped.
Yeah. All right.
All right, stay safe.
I love you.
I love you. Get home safe.
Okay.
Discomfort tolerance, huh? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Do you want to stop the...
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. Maybe I'll keep it running on the way back.
I'm sad.
I'm what?
I'm sad.
Okay.
It's like the droopy dog thing right. From... Like,
I'm sad.
It's like not Looney Tunes, but something like that.
Yeah. What was his name?
I think it was Droopy Dog.
Droopy.
Yeah.
He needs some joy.
Yeah.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.